Welcome back, episode 26, Get a Grip on Lighting. On today's show, we have the Secretary General of the Xaga Consortium, Dr. D. Dentonier. What's Xaga? Well, listen to the episode. What Dr. Dentonier is trying to do is turn chaos into order in this global, wild, crazy lighting business. Check it out. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Kurtzon Lighting. Go to KURTZON.com, man, Kurtzon.com. Why go there? Why check them out? Listen, if you're in the specification grade lighting end of this business, check out Kurtzon. These guys, they make the best fixtures in the world. Bottom line, they're hardcore. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about their clean room and containment stuff today. Are you in that game? Do you sell to pharmaceutical companies, labs, universities, military places where they need highly specific lighting systems for science? Are you in that game? You got to get to know Kurtzon better. They have a full line of clean room and containment fixtures. We're talking narrow spectrum troffers. We're talking vivarium troffers, corner mounts, linear wraps, a whole bunch of different things. I'm going to talk about their KL vivarium troffer. Just list off some of the benefits. 1x4, 2x2, 2x4, red, white LED luminaires. Rated IP65. ISO 3-9 clean spaces, 209E class 1-100,000 clean spaces, wet location, one piece overlapping door frame, robotically seam welded housing, 0-10 volt dimming, narrow spectrum 630 nanometers to 660 nanometers, red non-filtered LEDs, white, red LED switching. Come on, man. Go to Kurtzon.com. Especially if you're into the specification side of the business, the high-end side, you go to Kurtzon.com. KURTZON.com, man. KurtzonLighting.com. Not KurtzonLighting.com. Kurtzon.com for Kurtzon Lighting. That's right. And this episode, and every episode, is brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org. That's nailed.org for information on joining Nailed, LS1, LS2, LS Controls. Come on, man. Get some education from Nailed. Best educational programs in the business, I think, anyway, my opinion. And without further ado, we give you the Secretary General of the Xaga Consortium, Dr. D. Dentonier, episode 26, Get a Grip on Lighting. I forgot the name of the show. Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, D.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for having me here.
Say hi to Greg.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for setting this up. You must be the technical wizard.
not quite.
Glad we got it working. It's always a challenge. But with you, apparently not. But
we got it done.
Tell us how this Xaga Consortium started.
Well, actually, that's a good question. I'm not a historian there, but I think it started 8 years ago, which was well before my time with Xaga in the city, when a bunch of companies got together saying that a digital lighting industry needs an industry consortium for setting specifications at a fast pace, consensuate with what we see in digital world. And so that's how it got to be. That's how what the initial thinking was. So it, industrial consortium, digital lighting, LED, and I think there's a big number of companies taking the lead at that time, Philips Lighting, Osram, a number of other big players, Panasonic, LG, you name them, they were there.
What have been some of your successes so far?
We've been pretty successful with our LED module interface specifications. So specifically the spot modules, linear modules, these kind of things. So, and there specifically, we've been focusing on the mechanical interfaces. Put it concrete, can I wave one at you? So sure, you will recognize this one. So yeah. It's a linear board. And what in Xaga we've done is develop a mechanical interface specification for such linear boards. Makes it easier for component makers, you know, having a fixed interface, they can focus on quality rather than have all sort of nuisance variation into their products. Also makes it easy for luminaire OEMs that have, say, second supplier options, all sort of these things that come with standardization and interface specifications. So with these, there's lots of companies adhering to our specifications, producing LED boards, LED modules according to the specifications. So I think this one, the linear ones, are a very successful and popular interface specification.
Is it where the actual LED module is placed on the board, or is it the lumens per watt, or how does it work?
Not at all, neither. So it's the mechanical interface. So it's the shape of the device, as well as keep out areas where you can put luminaires, but it does not prescribe where you put the luminaire LEDs. So here we have one with lots of LEDs. Here we have one, I'm not sure whether it's really well visible, according to the same specification, where the LEDs are at a different location. So it's not about the location of the LEDs, except that we define keep-out variants. It's about the mechanical shape of the device. That's the main thing here, and the position of the screw holes. These kind of things comprise the mechanical interface, and that's eliminating, I would say, a nuisance for a lot of players in the industry. And that's why we do this.
What percentage of the market of luminaire manufacturers are Zaga compliant?
Yeah, we don't know that. We did conduct a market research in this area fairly recently, looking at the year 2017. But and that allowed us to say that for the Zaga members, they have approximately 50% of their portfolio in Zaga compliant form factors. And that then relates to these linear modules, to the spot modules, and to the COB modules. But I do not know of any market intelligence more generally also comprising non-Zaga members or former Zaga members. So the market research covered only a set of companies relatively close to Zaga, big ones, be it that. So.
And they're at 50% compliance. And they're at 50% compliance average.
50% of the portfolio is compliant for these Zaga members and close to Zaga members companies, but I cannot make a statement globally.
And I don't mean to back up, but I kind of want to, just because I think a lot of people listening to this might not even be familiar with what Zaga is. So do you want to just give us, you talked about it started 10 years ago or 8 years ago. But give us an overview of what it is and what the purpose is.
Yeah, okay. Zaga is an industry consortium comprising players along the value chain from the lighting industry. And what they do is they make interface specifications, set standards for interfaces of components in LED luminaires. So these interfaces may be mechanical, they may be optical, electrical, thermal, or communication interfaces. So these are the five interfaces that we look at. And although I say all interfaces are in scope, Zaga has, in its first year of existence, focused primarily, I would say, on mechanical interfaces of LED modules. Why did Zaga come into being? As said, the industry wanted a vehicle for fast standard setting, which is useful in lots of occasions. And the first thinking is to drive out unnecessary variation in the industry. I often call that. So the idea is very familiar. If you look at light bulbs, so how many sockets do you need? You may need two, you may need five, but you don't need them in all sizes and shapes. In fact, having them in all sizes and shapes is only counterproductive, very confusing for the market. We transported this thinking to the era of LED, where we also said, okay, if you look at these linear modules and the high volume applications, how many form factors do you need? Well, you may need five, you may need 10, but you do not need the infinity of sizes and form factors that you can imagine. Well, what companies typically do when left on their own, when producing components like these, they will converge on some form factors for, I would say, arbitrary reasons, not really thought through. So then in a consortium, you get together to agree on specifications like these and to limit the amount of form factors that we have in the industry. So that's the initial thinking of Zaga as I see it. Look at interfaces of components in LED luminaires with the idea to drive out unnecessary variation. Variation that does not add value to customers. Variation, on the other hand, that even hinders our customers. You need to do that in a consortium. You need to get together as companies to discuss this because it will not happen in itself. So that is, I think, what I would see the initial thinking in Zaga.
Okay, and now you're the Secretary General of Zaga, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and you work at Philips?
That is correct.
Okay, so what does the position at Zaga entail then? Is it a volunteer job?
No. I do this as part of my position in Philips Lighting. This is well known. It's also on every slide that I present as an initial. So in Philips, we have a group of professionals devoted to standardization. And one of the things they do is take management positions in consortia like these and to for the organizational matters, I would say. So as Secretary General, I am responsible for the organizational matters, legal, financial, so not so specifically strategic or lighting direction. That is left to the member companies. And I'm then there in that this respect, more their spokesman than anything else.
Are you guys like an accrediting body? So would manufacturers advertise that their fixtures are Zaga compliant as a way of promoting them in the market? Or that component makers would say this?
Yeah, that is part of the thinking. So if you develop standards, interface specifications, then manufacturers may choose to develop components according to these interface specifications. Then next to this, we have a testing and certification program to verify that indeed these components comply to the specification. So in that sense, we have a testing and certification program that goes with this. So this is important if you think about interoperability of components. So to set the interfaces and to drive out a variation, as I described, is one part of the use of Zaga. And I think that's really worthwhile. But this also allows manufacturers of different components to manufacture components that are in some sense compatible, being the different ends of the interface, a COB and its holder. But in order to verify that these components indeed match, you may want to have more certainty as a manufacturer, as a luminaire OEM that integrates these products into the luminaire. And so you may want to go for certification to verify that indeed they match as both being Zaga compliant.
I think there's a little bit of compliance fatigue in the lighting industry right now. you have DLC, you got IEEE 1789. We didn't even hear of Zaga until you were going to come on the show. And then I'm listening to what you're saying and it's like, okay, I get it. But how many different organizations are manufacturers meant to be a part of and support? And why should Zaga be the number one organization that they join and support? Because it seems like there's going to be multiple different types of standards being created, some in the US, some in Europe, some with Zaga, some with Energy Star, you know, all these different organizations. What differentiates Zaga? Why is Zaga better?
Well, Zaga is not better, not necessarily. Zaga is different. So Zaga creates interface specifications, which is different from a compliance program enforced by some regulatory entity. So it's an absolutely voluntary program picked up by the lighting industry to make things easier for the lighting industry and to improve the ways of working in the lighting industry. And in that sense, it sets itself apart against the schemes that you just mentioned, which which test compliance for energy performance or these kind of things. For us, it's a voluntary thing, and we see this as an either market enabler or making the market more efficient. And I would say that sets it apart from the organizations you just mentioned.
How many members are there in Zaga?
There's about, I usually say 100 members, but the heart of the matter is that currently we have 81 company members in Zaga.
There's like five, hang on. There's 5,000 LED fixture manufacturers in Shenzhen alone, China. Yeah. You know, and they're producing basically whatever they want, right? Is that like they're making their form factors however they feel they want to make them? Or is there a body in China that's competing with Zaga? Is there a Chinese?
No, there's
body?
Not.
No, there isn't. Okay. So Zaga is the
there's
only
not.
One.
And as far as I'm aware, we're the only consortium looking at the interface of components in LED luminaires. The 5,000 fixture makers in China may or may not want to source components according to the Zaga specifications. As said, it's a completely voluntary scheme, and only the certification part, so our standards are freely available. So they would anyway be able to manufacture the components according to our specifications. As said, I think the industry benefits from that.
Why would a particular why would a particular manufacturer benefit though? What would be good for a manufacturer? Like, let's say you're a medium-sized Chinese manufacturer of luminaires. Why would you join Zaga? Why would it benefit you?
There's two sides here on the benefits. One is from the component makers and one is from the luminaire manufacturers. We believe that luminaire manufacturers benefit from stable interfaces and interoperable interfaces for some of their components in the LED luminaires. Having these interfaces standardized allows them for second sourcing, because it will be easier to find and guarantee a substitute for a component that you use in your luminaire. Making these interfaces based on standards also agrees you guarantees you, I would say, a more stable roadmap for your product, because you can rely on the availability on the components according to these specifications and of the longevity of the delivery of these. So there's advantages in taking a standard track in the luminaire as a luminaire OEM.
So are you with, I don't mean to keep bringing it up, but with Philips, do you have another job or is Zaga your full-time job?
Yeah, I have other jobs.
Okay.
Yeah, I have other jobs on behalf of Philips. I'm also in the, my main background is in connectivity. I'm also a technical working group chair of an alliance that we call Fairhair. And I'm also in the board of the pension fund of Philips, as in a completely different matter.
Got it. So is this title you do on a yearly basis, or how do they determine who is the secretary general of the organization?
Yeah, that's elected biannual. So according to our bylaws, it's either possible that an outside figure person takes the lead in organizational matters in Zaga, or that one of the companies proposes a person that could do this job. And in this case, mm-hmm. Philips Lighting proposed that I did it. There's biannual elections, so and every company can propose candidate secretary generals, so to say.
So do you work for Signify or Philips Lighting?
That's a different thing. Yeah, that's a different thing. No, currently I work for Philips Lighting. Yeah, you know okay. that. So name change has been announced, but will not be implemented until okay. after the shareholders meeting. And okay. and that will take some, I believe, a month or so from now.
Let me ask you another question. So 81 members, I mean, are they mostly Western manufacturers, like companies in Europe and America?
Yeah. What do you... And it's most...
Sorry. Carry on. No, go ahead.
And it's fair to say that even most of our members, in the sense that regular members that are actively setting the standards are from Europe. From Europe, so we have Panasonic and Samsung as bigger regular members from the Asia area, but the other members are mainly European. Of course, you can always argue about a company being European.
Sure, Philips is Dutch. Come on. Philips is a Dutch company. So
yeah, thank you very much. Thank you, and we're proud of that.
So, do you guys lobby the European Union to make this a regulatory issue? Do you guys go to the governments and say, "Hey, there's no outreach"?
No. That is not the same. So we're absolutely not in the process of making our standards or any kind of a regulatory, of a mandatory type of standard by regulatory body. I think that would also be not fitting, because as a regulatory body like the European Union, you cannot specify a certain brand or whatever. So in that sense, no. On the other hand, in Zaga, we do follow what goes on in the European Union, for instance, with respect to serviceability of luminaires. We think that's interesting. We think that in order to implement the scheme over a longer period, interface specifications would be needed. And so we keep an eye on that and to see how we could contribute to that. But that is a very different thing.
I think you're 10 years late, though, because I know there's a huge base of installed, particularly on LED outdoor streetlights for roadway lighting, where I've seen lots of problems with the fixtures, arrays burning out and drivers burning out, and this sort of leaks in seals. And there's a municipality in Ontario that did a huge upgrade in 2012, and they're having a lot of problems with burnouts, and they don't have replaceable components for those light fixtures. They have to replace the entire fixture every time. So would Zaga, if those fixtures were Zaga compliant, would they have the ability to replace the components inside?
No, that is not part of our program. And it is something we would be interested to look at and maybe we're 10 years late there, but I think the thing you identify is true. And so indeed, as part of a serviceability outlook, you could zoom in on outdoor luminaires and see if we could do something to address the problems there and facilitate changing drivers or modules by means of the interfaces we have. I always say, I think that would be worthwhile to have that as a standard. Of course, all companies can have a look at that and do their own proprietary solution and service model. So that's absolutely fine. I think there's value in the market to have these things as a standard. And yes, that is something we would be interested to look at. But in honesty, we do not currently have a program running for that.
Now, what manufacturer has the most Zaga? Is it Zaga or Zaga? Sorry, first of all.
That depends on where you come from. So in okay. Our European, we say Zaga, but the Chinese have more like a Jaga type of pronunciation. Okay. But it depends on where they come from. To be very dialect specific, but I don't know that, so our Chinese members can explain this a lot better. But
so we'll call it whatever we want then. What manufacturer has the most?
I think that is true. On terms of serviceability of outdoor luminaires, I would like to say that Olset, although we do not have currently programs running on changing drivers and modules, and we may be 10 years late there in developing that. But it is on our interest. We do have a interface specification ongoing to change modules and connectivity modules or sensor modules that you can switch on top or underneath a luminaire. And that's also a sort of upgradability type of function for the outdoor luminaires, which I think is very useful and worthwhile for the industry. And that's a specification we recently completed, and we call that we number our very engineering wise, so we number our specification in Zaga. So it's called specification 18 or book 18. And it allows you to mount a sensor or connectivity module on a outdoor luminaire. That's getting quite some attention. And I think that is an example of being able to change a component in the luminaire. And you may have various reasons for that, to do that.
So but what manufacturer has the most qualified, Zaga qualified products? What manufacturer does?
I wouldn't be able to answer that for sure, but I guess it would be Philips Lighting.
Okay. So is the goal then, to put it in simple terms, you take a lay-in trough or a 2x4 fixture and Philips puts a Zaga qualified chipboards in there, and then let's say GE or Current or whatever they're called has a 2x4 fixture that's Zaga qualified component. Now you buy a Philips fixture, and then 3, 5, 10 years later, you need to replace the component, or you want to replace it because it's out. You can then buy another brand and put it in that same fixture. Is that the goal of the chipboard itself?
Yeah. So we have to change to what we want and what we do. So currently the interfaces are mostly mechanical, and this will help you to do exactly this at manufacturing stage. So at manufacturing, okay, is relatively easy to insert one module from one vendor and replace it with a module from another vendor. This is something else from replacing a component in field after a few years of operation. There you need more in terms of interoperability than just a mechanical fit. So you somehow have to be able to figure out an equivalent, see whether it matches with the driver. There's a lot of more variables that come into the equation. And doing this in field, figuring out what you need, what will fit there, what will operate, is a harder thing. So I think, yes, what you just sketched, we do have that as an ambition and also as a realization, as also as a recognized advantage. But it's mainly during manufacturing. And indeed, we want to move this ability to switch components from the manufacturing to what I would call just before installation, as a sort of late stage configuration issue, as something you can do in the field by a trained installer or something. And it gets gradually harder. You get gradually more restrictions on the interface, and it is a progression that we see and that we want to develop in Zaga.
Got it. And now this is a global initiative, but is there one market that you see adapting it more than others? I'm assuming the European market, or are you seeing it all over the world in terms of end users using Zaga product?
End users is also a term that for me comes close to a person in a home changing things. So, but that is also a category that may be in scope. So currently we're mostly focusing on the professional market, and then it would be more a trained installer with some electrical qualifications, but not necessarily a very extensive know-how of the lighting industry.
So I'm thinking here that Zaga is for manufacturers who are looking for component supplies to be interoperable with one another. And it's not progressed to any point of maintaining those light fixtures in the field. It's simply about manufacturing processes and making a streamlining manufacturing processes across an industry, as opposed to making, it hasn't progressed yet to where it affects, where you guys have thought, well, what if we're replacing components in the field? This is really more about streamlining manufacturing. Is that correct?
That is exactly what I tried to express. And maybe you should become Secretary General because you put it so well. Yes.
At least does it pay well? Yeah. Does it pay well?
Sorry. but indeed, that's what I tried to say. So currently the Zaga realization is more during the manufacturing process. So we allow ecosystems of components, so to say that interoperably, and that you can design in the luminaire at design stage during manufacturing, moving this out to maintenance later on is harder, and it's the second stage. We're not there yet.
So is there a value proposition for a manufacturer to join the Zega consortium? Like, would you say that there's a cost benefit analysis for them there, that they're better off in Zega than they'd be if they weren't Zega compliant?
I do not have this as a quantitative analysis, because I guess you're asking for that. I do this, have this as a general term, in the sense of having this second source an option if you take to the Zega compliant form factor. But let me be clear here. As a luminaire OEM, being a member of Zega allows you to have earlier insight in what you're doing, but it does of course not limit you in sourcing in Zega components. Eh? So we're open in our standards, they're made available after publication. And every luminaire OEM can look into this, can ask for them for compliant factors without having any relation with Zega. So I think that basing your products, your luminaires, on a standard track type of components is a sensible thing to do, because of the advantages I mentioned. It need not cost you anything, because you need not be a member of a consortium in order to do that.
So they can benefit without being members.
They can benefit without being members. They can benefit without paying. It's very un-American, right? Okay, wrong. You can cut us out, I guess.
So, I'm a Canadian.
I guess it will be edited for language.
And I'm good with it.
I'm a Canadian, D.
Oh, you're Canadian. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's an American. I'm a Canadian.
And
I'm
good. Okay, yeah. He's good with it. And so the benefit of being a member is then the ability to have early information on what is cooking in Zega, and the benefit of having of being able to use the logo. But in order to use the components, it's not necessary to be a member.
I wonder what the future of Zega is going to be like. It's one of those things where, you know, right now there's so many different accrediting bodies coming at the lighting industry from different directions: energy efficiency, the health effects of lighting, LED flicker, and you have them, and then you have different government regulations which are you know, piling into the business and trying to tell the industry what to do. And like I said, there's a little bit of fatigue here. I think if you could peer down the road, do you see Zega as a very strong force in components? Or do you think it's going to be a difficult mountain to climb?
I think it's going to be a strong force, specifically because we are moving out from this engineering type of angle in terms of our specifications to a more installer and end user type of angle in our specifications. And let me clarify, for instance. We have this device. It's an interface that goes with that we call that a connectivity interface. It's to be part of a luminaire, and it interfaces mechanically to the luminaire and electrically and communication-wise to the driver. This interface integrates. Oops, I must find the right angle.
Move it a little bit. There you go.
Right, yeah, there. It goes the wrong way somehow. Must be English then. So this interface goes into the luminaire, and on top of it, you can plug a sensor or connectivity module. To have this interface as a standard is, again, in my view, a fantastic idea, because having this in all outdoor luminaires, that will entice a lot of sensor and connectivity module makers to develop applications for this interface. Then on the other hand, having these sensor and connectivity modules available for all sort of smart city applications will again add value to the luminaire. And having this as a set of proprietary interfaces by individual companies, which is also possible, is not going to set this this wheel in motion in which you will see many, many sensors and connectivity modules being developed. So I think that having interfaces like these as a standardized interface adds great value to the lighting industry and adds very much to the attractiveness of the outdoor luminaires and allows them much better to be a valuable role in the smart city scenarios.
What if it's restrictive in some way, though? What if it restricts innovation? Do you think that do you guys ever have discussions about, you know, these
all the time.
Restricting innovation?
We have that all the time. Yeah, so I think some sort of restriction is needed to make life efficient and to streamline operations. And so you must be very careful in what you restrict. You should not restrict what is currently in the focus of innovation. And that would be then blocking in terms of innovation. What you would like to restrict are what we call the nuisance parameters that add limited value to the customers, or where it is very important to have it a standard in order to allow this innovation. As I just tried to explain with this interface for outdoor luminaires, to have this interface as a standard is not standing away of the great innovations, because the important and innovations are in the sensing applications, are in the connectivity applications, and to interface them so does not limit this type of innovation to happen. Rather, it stimulates this innovation to happen, because it provides a platform, if you see it in terms of lots of a large installed base of outdoor luminaires.
I agree with you. I agree with you. You know why, though? I 100%.
What happens?
I don't know. I think I do. So, like, let me give you an example. So, if there were there are restrictions basically on the types of the length of a fluorescent tube. Okay, so there's a 4 foot tube, a 3 foot tube. 2 foot, whatever, those are 90% or 95%. And because those form factors are restricted in the legacy technologies, it allowed people to develop LEDs in those form factors to fit into those fixtures in a retrofit scenario. Do you understand what I said there? So because the form factors were restricted in the legacy technology, so a PL13 is a PL13, an MR16 is an MR16. It's this size, this shape, this base. A 4 foot fluorescent tube is 48 inches in length with two medium bipin sockets on the end of it and whatever. Because of that, it allowed people then to develop those restrictions, actually freed people to develop replacement LED technologies to fit into those restrictions. If the size of the tubes was different in every fixture, so if every manufacturer made a different length of 4 foot, they made it 4 foot, 2 inches or 39.5 inches or whatever, you would not have had the economies of scale to build the LED replacement tubes that you made in order to deploy them in the market effectively and efficiently. So it's interesting that I think, you know, that restriction in some ways allows for creativity. It's like poetry, D. You ever read poetry? Okay.
Occasionally.
Okay. So older poetry, which is better than new poetry, older poetry has tons of rules in it. But if you read the poem, you wouldn't know there were any rules there because it sounds so beautiful and perfect. But the reason why someone was able to develop it was because there was restrictions. I agree with you, man. I think if you could get the restrictions right, you would boom innovation. Okay. But you have to get the restrictions right. That's the key.
Yeah, and that's why it's also important that many companies contribute to consortium like these, because you need many inputs, many points of view in order to get the restrictions right. That is, that is what I think is important, that industry gets together to discuss this, because in the end, it's highly valuable for the industry.
Yeah, like if you say, okay, everybody, you're going to make everything this length with this holes for screw holes or whatever. After that, get after your innovation on your energy efficiency or whatever, right? or develop your software for communicating with the fixtures or whatever you want to do, but make it fit into this thing so that, you know, people can deploy it quickly and easily in the market. I agree with Zaga's premise. I think it's a good idea. I don't know if you guys are going to be successful or if it's going to work, but certainly I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. So what you explained very well, and I think we're going to be more visible as we move this out more to infield type of replacement, as we see this for these, like you have for the LED tube or LED bulbs based on the regular sure. E27 or fittings. That's exactly the same type of point. And innovation is not that you can make a LED board of 4 feet or 4 feet and 1 inch or something like that. It is indeed about performance and having this restriction to 4 feet. If it's wildly impractical, then you just add another form factor. But we do not need all these form factors. And the invisibility of relative invisibility of Zaga is because most of these things went into the engineering phase. And what we now want to do is move this out towards more for laypersons, visible phases like installing and in the end users. But I think with this program, we will be more visible, I think. We shouldn't say more successful, because we've done pretty well in terms of market acceptance of some of our specifications. But I think it will be more visible for a lot of people if you move these interfaces out to be usable for replacements of components, sensors, smart modules, but also in the end modules, LED modules in field or late stage.
Okay, I think that's a podcasty. Anything else, Greg?
Okay, I can't end after that poetry comment you had that Woo! Summed it up.
Well, no, I think that's what it is. I think I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I'm like sitting around thinking, this is what I was thinking. Honestly, I'm thinking this is a scheme from Philips in Sylvania to re-grab the market and make everybody buy a certain patented product they have or whatever. But I think what you guys are doing is the right thing. I don't know if you're going to be able to do it. That's a tough challenge you guys have. You've taken on a serious challenge.
Yeah. And I don't think we're going to be as successful with every interface that we make. and that's the nature of things. But for instance, this, I am now very bullish about this, this outdoor connectivity interface, because I think that really serves a need in the market and will enable the market rather than hinder it, and will enable innovation and a good place of lighting in a smart city type of things rather than hinder it. And so I think that I also see currently that there's lots and lots of attention for this interface, lots of modules being developed. And the idea is so good that it has been around for ages already in the US in terms of the NEMA socket. You will be aware of that one, but it's a modernized version for LED times and allowing for additional type of applications.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, D.
Okido, was my pleasure.
And, no, it was ours.
Okido.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Kurtz On Lighting. Go to KURTZON.com, KurtzOn.com. Why Kurtzon? If you're on the specification end of this business, tough applications, high requirements, you know, the fixtures really have to work. Kurtzon's the answer. They've been in the game for so long, over 100 years, almost as old as Canada. They got the best warranty, the 5/10, which I look at and I know it's legit. You don't have to dig much further than just looking at the little thing on their website. And Scotty, throw up the clean room and containment page for our YouTube viewers. They got a full line of clean room and containment, among other things, but we're going to talk about that today. Are you doing lighting for pharmaceutical companies, labs, the military, places that have specific needs? Well, Kurtzon's the answer. Got to get to know Kurtzon better. They have a full line up there. Let's talk about their narrow spectrum, 1x1x4, 2x2, and 2x4, KL Amber Troffers. Rated IP65, suitable for ISO 3-9 clean spaces. Suitable for 209E class 1 to 100,000 clean spaces, wet location ETL listed, a one-piece overlapping door frame, robotically seam welded housing, 0 to 10 volt dimming, narrow spectrum 590 nanometers true amber LEDs, white/amber LED switching, recessed housing for the T-bar grid and the hard lid grid. Come on, man, go to kurtzon.com. They make great stuff. They have the best warranty. They've been in business for 100 years. If you have specification grade needs, Kurtzon's the answer. KURTZON.com for Kurtzon Lighting. And this episode and every episode that's on the getagriponlighting.com website is brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. You go to NAILD.org, that's nail.org, for information on joining and for taking some education. If you're running around out there and you're selling LEDs and you don't know what happened in the last 100 years before we got to now, you should take LS1. Why? Why LS1? Well, you're going to learn about mercury vapor, fluorescent, metal halide, incandescent, CFL, all that stuff that happened. Why is it important to know that? Well, I think it was Karl Marx who said that history repeats itself, first as a farce and then as a tragedy. So we don't want to be making the same mistakes again, right? So you go to LS1, you go take an LS1, you go to nail.org, take LS1, find out what happened first, and then go sell some LEDs on top of it. It'll make you better at what you do. Trust me on that. We'd like to thank Dr. D. Dentonier, the Secretary General of the Jaga Consortium, for, man, that's important work. It's time for the industry to settle down and to get a grip on this thing, man. I mean, he's trying to turn chaos into order, and I think it's a good idea. So thanks, Dr. Dentonier, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. That was episode 26, Get a Grip on Lighting.